Mr. Scott, an alien object of unbelievable destructive power is less than 3 days away from this planet. The only starship in interception range is the Enterprise. Ready or not, she launches in 12 hours.
Damn it, Bones, I need you. Badly.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, episode 200. That's
what?
200.
200?
200.
Wow.
200.
We should have done something special.
Well, as I am known in this, I am known in the podcasting world for not loving those celebrations, perhaps. I probably should like them more than I do, but they usually kind of annoy me. But
yeah, I noticed how you backed out of the Coverville 500.
I did. I backed out of that one. I don't really. On TMS, big days came and went.
It's too much pressure.
I'm not a
too
huge fan.
It is. It's a lot of pressure.
And I think people just want a straight up damn episode is what they want.
Coverville 500, still one of the greatest controversial nights in the history of the Frog Pants Network.
Yeah, for sure.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, especially because then it wasn't even on the Frog Pants Network, and it, right. But it was, man, the spitting, the
cheese action,
the cheese, yeah.
The cheese action,
the cheese action. Must flow.
It's good stuff. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are mining the very depths of film entertainment each week for all mankind. Again, this is episode 200, and I'm joined tonight by Brian Malfunction Dunaway.
Malfunction.
Inner monologue, Captain William Deckard, Stardate, Thursday, something, something. I just had the weirdest encounter with Rear Admiral James T. Kirk. He seemed quite agitated about a meeting he had to attend before boarding the Enterprise. For the life of me, I can't think of what kind of meeting could only take 3 minutes. Man, I gotta poop. Oh, 3 minute meeting in transmission.
Nah, the whole opener is very different now in my head.
Totally, yeah.
He walked kind of funny too. Nice job.
Yeah.
Also with us, Randy, sending friendship messages everywhere, Jordan.
Yes. Aloha, FilmSack, for the 200th time. Aloha. Now, Stardate, number, I just made up. Got the old crew back together today. Every single one that you remember, they all made it. Spock, Uhura, Bones, Scotty, Sulu, the Russian, and this one new guy who, for some reason, really pisses me off just by being here. Yeah. Name's Deckler or Pricker or some stupid name like that. Just thinking about it makes me so angry. Okay, got to pull myself together and hope that by the end of this mission, we need to make a human sacrifice to the bad guy because I'm going to trick Pricker into killing himself.
Pricker. Pricker's a great alternate name.
I kept thinking I'd call him Dick Deckard, but it wasn't
Dick
right.
Deckard. No, he has a hell of a trope. We'll get to him later. Mm. Finally, with us, Brian. Whatever beamed back of him didn't live very long. Evan,
it's a good thing.
All right, I'm gonna try and do this one with a little voice sample, a little echo here. Okay. I am not Lieutenant Ilia. I am a pattern made from her carbon identity. I was chosen to be a familiar means of communication for you, Kirk Unit. I was also chosen because V'ger was curious to see if I was completely shaved. And V'ger is pleased.
You're not the only one that wondered.
Right. She had to come back with that sexy little uniform.
Well, yeah. You know what? People forget. I think that was Kirk's quarters. Was it not? And I think she put on one of his little skimpy, I think that was his.
That's even
those
funnier.
Kirk's pajamas.
Yeah.
Right.
Those are Kirk's shorties.
What kind of pajamas do you have after wearing space pajamas all day? Because everybody had on their space pajamas and their camel toes and everything else. It was,
hey, that's the robe I stole from the Ryza Pleasure Planet Hotel.
That was very Ryza, wasn't it? And I saw people earlier walking around on the deck in there in the same stuff, and I went, yes. this is the Ryza folks landing for a big meeting, or what's going on here?
The Andorian?
No.
Yeah, there was one in a crowd scene in the beginning when they were all watching the decellularization of the Klingon ship. Just for a second there, you got a blue guy out there with little antenna.
Missed it completely.
Oh, man.
I should have said,
hey.
But I didn't.
Hey. So many Bothans died to bring you that Andorian.
I know, right? So a lot of those guys have actually turned out to be fans, but we'll get to all that in a minute. Scott Fletcher wants to step in here and explain what the hell it is we're watching as we check one more Star Trek movie off our list with Star Trek The Motion Picture. Scott Fletcher, take it away.
Star Trek The Motion Picture. This first Star Trek film reunites the USS Enterprise's original crew from the 1960s television show. Captain James T. Kirk, played by William Shatner, now an admiral, and his former crew must save humanity from a giant alien ship steadily approaching Earth. There's conflict on the ship as well as in the universe, as displaced Commander Decker, played by Stephen Collins, the Enterprise's new captain, becomes Kirk's assistant, Leonard Nimoy, and DeForest Kelly co-star.
He kept going in and out of Zap Brannigan.
He did a Zap Brannigan, exactly. Yeah,
exactly, yes.
It's really good. Anyway, it's Star Trek 1, the motion picture, the first movie. It's just called Star Trek, the motion picture.
Yeah.
The motion picture.
In case people who saw it in the theater were confused.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the motion picture.
Oh.
I thought I was watching an episode.
It's a bad title.
Yes.
They could have called it anything else. Like,
they should have called it anything else.
Sure. You think so?
Sure. So. What else are you going to call it, Brian? Think about it. The name motion picture is, I don't like that on any movie that says such and such the movie, unless it's a big time parody of like some crappy comedy from the 60s.
Well, that's what I'm trying to remember. Was there something that did do that, like Naked Gun, the movie or something like that? Wasn't there a, I know Naked Gun wasn't it, but
something with the movie in the title.
Yes.
Movies with the movie.
I definitely think there was a. there was a big marketing move here to go from the TV series, which not everybody had seen, but it was fairly popular. But you definitely had to go, look, this is a big thing. People, come check it out. There's a lot more to it. I think it was totally marketing.
The Muppet movie.
The Muppet movie.
The Simpsons movie.
Okay.
And then there's these scary movie,
the
epic movie.
The motion picture.
So when it's like juvenile, that's cool.
The SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Kentucky Fried movie.
Pokemon, the first movie.
Uh-huh.
But
Transformers, the movie. But there have been a lot of it. The Hannah Montana, the movie. And it always seems to differentiate the TV show from the movie.
Four years ago, there was a movie called Another Gay Movie.
Interesting. But the phrase motion picture, so totally redundant. No, nobody else does that. And you make you mean
not
you
now.
Well, not ever. No, there's just no. Why would you do that? It's
1979 something something.
The motion picture.
Hamburger. The motion picture.
Tekken, the motion picture.
Oh, Tekken. Fatal Fury. The motion picture. Boy, Fatal Fury and Tekken are basically the same movies. So that's
weird. You know what? People are going to look back and do the same thing about all these stupid 3D movies we had. Because everything we tagged that 3D.
Piranha
3D.
We're not doing it that much anymore because now they're offering it in not just 3D, right? I mean, you don't see Thor Dark World 3D. It's Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, even Avatar. Even Avatar wasn't Avatar 3D, even though it was the big push was see it in 3D. I think that's just... If someone does it now, it's Piranha 3D where they're goofing around.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Or Jaws 3D. Like it's a play on Jaws 3D and Friday the 13th 3D.
That's an old dead way of doing it, I think.
Yeah. When it's your third movie, like Jackass
3D, you have to go 3D.
then you can do
that's
it.
That's funny.
It's a requirement.
That's pretty good. Do that. Anyway, we can all agree. Dumb name.
Why didn't we have Daryl on this one?
Okay. I thought about that. It's because he doesn't like this movie. He's
he doesn't like it.
We had this big.
So he's like the rest of us.
Yeah.
Hold on now. We had a huge argument on Twitter. Huge argument on Twitter today about the movie and about its legacy and what it meant and what it was and all that. And he says, take out all the boring stuff and it's his second favorite Star Trek movie.
What? What? I mean, the whole thing?
Well,
the boring stuff is 99% of the movie.
Now, here's where we're going to split. We're going to take two different roads here. Because I had a weird experience. I saw the movie. The last time I saw the motion picture was when it was in theaters and I was 9 years old. Okay. Right. I was nine. Really? I was in a movie theater. Yeah. And I hated it as a kid. Hated it.
Because it was stuff like the TV show. It was boring.
It was boring.
This week for episode 200 of Film Sack, Scott did Quaaludes for the first time.
I did. And I've changed my mind. No, so here's the deal. I'm 9 years old. I know it's bad. I didn't like it. I thought it was slow. This is a kid who is still coming down from the Star Wars high. All right. And I think a lot of people were.
That's a lot of, that's nothing but action.
It's one of the problems with this movie coming out the year it did. Anyway, I remember just thinking, what? That wasn't very fun. And most of my memories of the movie aren't actually from the movie. They're from the Mad Magazine Mort Drucker parody of the movie, which I had and I read multiple times.
Yes.
Right.
Like in the, I'll give you an example. There's a panel in that comic, in that spread. And he's my favorite artist in the world. I just love Mort Drucker. But he's got this shot of, I want to say it's Kirk or maybe it's McCoy, but somebody is crouched down with a stick and a marshmallow on the end of it. And they're cooking it over the remains of whoever died in the transporter accident. Nice. Now, in my head, I actually thought that there was like guts and stuff on the transporter beam pad.
Yeah.
Right, but it was the Mad Maggot. So that's how bad the streams have been crossed. I really, I don't know where one starts and the other one begins, which is parody and which isn't. So when this presented itself to see again, I remember going, ugh, really? I don't know if I should freaking start. Because I know it only gets good with Khan. That's the whole rule. Every other movie's good. All the other, the odds are bad. The evens are good, right? That's the whole thing with Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I really, really liked it this time around. And I'll tell you what I liked.
What did you take?
I liked the kind of weird.
Can I have some?
There's some problems. Okay, it's not perfect, but there's a hard sci-fi take on this thing that I didn't expect. I didn't expect the effects to look better than most of all the other original series character Trek films.
Well, and there's a reason for that, but keep going.
All right, we'll get to that in a minute. But some of that practical stuff mixed with ILM stuff looked really, really good. I liked the weird idea that somehow our Voyager thing we sent out there to find other intelligences in other worlds got co-opted by a super intelligence and turned into the core of a giant metal planet. That is just badass. Like there's some
and that
cool
is just something
stuff.
That's something that Spock pulls out of his ass. That was the most disappointing part for me was watching this movie again. Haven't seen it in 20 years. And I'm remembering, oh, they make this huge discovery. No. Spock is just like, there was a machine planet.
Yeah.
Maybe it ran into them and, kind of got some powers.
It's like, a cool idea.
It became lore, though. Even in the Wikipedia, it's like, this is what happened. But Spock was just guessing.
But I love this idea that this thing's got these, you know, our lousy technology whenever we sent that probe into space, and it's not good enough at long-range stuff. But this other intelligence is not intelligent enough to understand that, hey, this thing can't do its job, not because the creator won't answer. Like, this whole idea that they're interpreting that as, you must answer and give us the information it seeks, when all that thing is doing is a real simple algorithm built in the 60s that's saying, is there anything out there? Nope. Okay. Anything out there? Nope. Okay. And it can't send it back to the quote unquote creator. That stuff is really cool.
It became powerful enough to make an energy field around itself that they said in the movie was 82 astronomical units wide. That's bigger than 12. Our solar system. I heard 82.
Oh, really? Yeah.
82.
My bird, 82. I heard something about 12 because he got really super stoked about 12.
So it's bigger than our solar system. This thing is projecting an energy cloud bigger than our solar system.
Twice as big as our solar system.
And it can't read its own dirty nameplate. Seriously?
Okay. Fair enough. That kind of stuff's silly. And that was all set up just to be the big reveal where Kirk's wiping it off and realizes that it's Voyager 6.
Like the worst twist ever. Come on. Seriously.
It's a bad twist.
Especially this way not that, the last the way that Shatner delivers it to V-G-E-R V-ger.
There's like an episode of The Electric Company.
V-O-Y-A-G-E-R.
Yeah,
Voyager.
Six. He has to rub off the six. It's a six.
I was really hoping in the middle of that he would say G-E-R. or something like make it funny.
It's beautiful words. Yeah, I don't have.
Look, I can make the word age.
I will not argue with any of those. Those are definitely things that deserves to be critiqued for. There's no question about any of that. But I guess I'm old enough now to where the stuff I thought was boring, I found really interesting this time. So here's some examples. 15 minutes basically solid of them flying through that thing.
Yeah.
I liked it because I thought visually that stuff looked pretty cool. I love mysterious space shit. Like, that's my thing. It's my thing. And I didn't realize it was ever in there. I always thought it was dumb when I was a kid.
Maybe the first time there's a 15-minute flyby.
Yeah.
But the third time there's a 15-minute flyby in
this. There's a lot of flybys.
It was ridiculous. I would like to know how anybody post Star Wars Episode 4, could have snuck this thing through an editing room, shown it to an editor, knocked him over the head, and then ran out with 3 hours of film.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know, man, because I'm telling you, if you think of this movie and you compare it to something like Star Wars, it's not gonna be that. But if you compare it like 2001, A Space Odyssey, I mean, it's right on.
It's a lot like the big long flying through the whole thing at the end of 2001 when going through this, the monolith. But
this thing is a love letter to Stanley Kubrick with a dick attached. Like, it is a Deckard. A Deckard pick attached. It's so Kubrickian. Like the opening, those establishing shots of everything. Every time you get to see something for the first time, it takes 3 minutes.
I kind of like that though.
Were the Klingons terribly labored at their speech to me, or was it? Mm-hmm.
No, you got to remember.
It's the first time they actually used the Klingon language.
Right. This was all Doohan's business. He had come up with some of that dialogue. I didn't know this. When I started reading up on this, it's like most of the dialogue or the Klingon dialect roots back to Doohan on the set making up words.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of his thing.
I think it was just him mispronouncing the things that were in the maybe CBS commissary.
Yeah, that was good. But I do like the Xanadu font they used for that scene.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I looked up the fonts. I was like, while fonts watching the beginning of this movie, I looked up the fonts, and they're called Star Trek Movie 1, Star Trek Movie 2.
Oh, wow,
like,
really?
They're really cool too.
They make their own typefaces for the movie. Is that how that works?
Yeah, there were some things about this movie that were unique and turning points in film, as far as I could see. Like that font, it's changed over the last 40 years, but not much. Mm. Like they came up with something for this movie and it stuck around. They came up with a theme for this movie, a musical theme, and damn, has it stuck around.
Yeah.
You know, it's become the thing that
blew my kids' mind, by the way. So I'm watching it and they're in here with me and a scene comes up where it goes, nar, 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 and my daughter goes, wait, pause that, dad, pause it. I pause it. She goes, something's wrong with the music. What is going on?
Right.
And I said, what does that remind you of? And we had this big back and forth and she's just about sweating toward the end trying to figure it out. And she finally yells out, that's Next Generation's theme. It sure is.
It's the outro kind of Next Generation.
The intro is a lot more intro-y though. The top part with the and this is not the director's cut, right? This isn't the 99 re-release. This is that other one.
Right. And the problem with the music in this movie is the movie. It's so long. They have to keep reusing tracks and you get a little tired of it. Like I did. I got a little tired of hearing that Next Generation outro theme the fifth time.
I don't know. I think it's because we've heard too much Next Gen already. I think if it in a vacuum without Next Gen as a thing to compare it to and having being able to binge on that on Netflix and stuff, I think it didn't. I don't think it was overused here.
I think this is a much different experience if you were in the theater.
Yeah.
I think
in 2001 they did. And I'm curious about the Netflix version because I watched I have the Blu-ray.
One of these. Okay.
Fancy epic.
You get that one free when you buy all the good Blu-rays. Yeah. Like basically.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're really paying for 2, 4, 6 and generations.
Sure, and get all these free even ones or odd ones.
All the odd ones for free.
Yeah,
but I don't know how the Netflix one differentiates from that. I've been looking at the alternate versions on IMDb, and I think the same one. I think we all basically did watch the same one, which is the director's edition, which came out in 2001. And
so you're saying you watched what the Blu-ray gave you?
Yes,
by default.
Yes.
And so, like, for instance, when Kirk's going to the new Enterprise for the first time and they can't beam him over, they put him in a shuttle, and then there's 20 minutes of slowly flying.
20
up
minutes
the
of flying around of the Enterprise.
Of Shatner eye screwing the Enterprise.
Okay. Just make it sure.
Let's go up the rear nacelles one more time.
One more time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's come up from behind it.
Right. Hey, Captain. No, that whole scene. Okay. Let's get my effects beef out of the way. Not my beef, but I want to just get this off my chest.
Yeah.
I was very, very surprised how cool effects looked in the movie. They looked good. There are a few broken problems, like them in the little shuttlecraft looking like a little right. slideshow.
Like a rear
like projected. Yes, yeah, rear yeah. projection on the front window of the shuttle.
That
the,
was pretty shuttle. Bad. But I can forgive that with these sweeping, awesome model shots and this really cool, like the stuff in the V'ger thing I thought looked really good.
Well, now the V'ger thing was all redone CGI. It was all brand mm-hmm. new stuff that was added in 2001.
But am I getting that or are you getting that? Like, I don't know if the Netflix version has any of that or not.
I'm pretty sure the Netflix one was, it was pretty,
I was going to say,
hot.
If it looked good, then it was
hot. Right.
It looked amazing. I remember the old one looking really bad.
Yeah, there is no doubt that Netflix has a port of the latest, whatever, the latest edition.
That's interesting. I might be giving this thing more credit for being newer or, you know, the things yeah, I right. liked.
But we all watched the same thing, Scott. I thought it looked okay, but it was still a crappy movie. It was way too long, way too boring. You put all the slapdash fancy crap on it you want, you know?
Yeah, right. And yeah. the visually pretty stuff, you see it for so long that it's like, okay, all right, cut to something else, please. All right, yes, I get it. It's a bunch of hexagons on the ground. Great, let's move on.
That hexagon thing looked cool, though.
It did for the first 2 minutes they showed it.
This feels good. You guys are exaggerating. I bet that was on screen for 5 seconds. This is the thing. I know this movie.
There was
got...
nothing on screen for 5 seconds in this movie.
Okay, fair enough. Nothing. But this movie, I get that it's everything's too overwrought. Everything's, yes, all those things are true. The uniforms are ridiculous. Them trying
pajamas.
To go too far, swing too far into the Kubrickian side of things, mm-hmm. I didn't love. But I remember it being worse. And when I saw it this time, I was like, it's not bad. There were worse things than this. And I'll tell you what the worst things are. Other Star Trek movies are worse than this.
No.
Yes.
No, I say this.
Are you saying 5 is better than this?
Yes. Yes.
Hold on a second.
5 is more watchable than this.
I will definitely, if you say you have to sit down and watch one or the other, I would prefer 5.
Holy shit. I'm shocked by that.
This is so insufferably long in places that, you know,
I started and finished a Puzzle and Dragons dungeon during one scene of this movie, and it was basically the scene where they decide that there's a shuttle approaching them, a deep space shuttle, a long range shuttle or something, and of course you know it's carrying Spock. Everybody mm-hmm. knows it's carrying Spock. There's no doubt about it.
Of course,
and right. I started playing Puzzle and Dragons, and I would glance up at the screen. Oh, they're still showing off those funny looking shuttles. All right. Another I played like 7 battles in this Puzzle and Dragons dungeon.
I finished an episode of Deep Space Nine during the scene where they're flying around the Enterprise.
You were watching other Star Trek while you was watching this like that.
Yeah.
I fit Star Trek 5 into the scene where they're flying into V'ger.
Fair enough. Right. It's long, it's drawn out. You're all right. But if you are telling me that this is not at least even just a hair better, a fuzzy gopher's butt hair better than 5.
And
then
look at
we are done here. What?
The whole hand waving of like, Decker's going to merge with Ilea into the whole V'ger thing. Ha, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Let's just get back on the ship. Don't worry about that science.
Well, why sure. They had to get out of there, man. The whole thing's about to take a dump or whatever happened. What happened actually to the planet thing? Did it just poof out of existence? What happened there? I wasn't actually sure.
To a different,
the music queued up, the Enterprise flew out of it, and boom.
It did do what Dunaway doesn't like about the TV shows, which is the last three minutes.
Got a problem. Fixed it. Okay, done.
Fixed the credits.
And then the very last line is this pithy, where shall we go? Just wherever.
What did he say?
Starship. They can't be possibly looking for it.
By the way, you got to put the trope alarm on that.
That one's pretty good. Oh, and it's a Star Trek trope alarm. Don't forget. Stolen from Star Trek in the first place. But hold on a second. When he said it, he said some words, though, in particular. He said, where do you want to go, Captain? And he goes, it was like some cowboy thing to say.
It wasn't second star to the left and keep going to midnight or whatever.
No.
It was just some boring thing.
Very close.
No, it was like onward and upward or something dumb.
Something like that.
It was real dumb. I know, dude, ending was stupid. I'm with you. All these things, I'm with you. But there is a cool, edgy, hard sci-fi story in there somewhere that appealed to me. Now, it may not have been the best use of time or the best use of longing shots or any of this, but it did have this core idea that totally worked for me. And I don't remember it working for me when I was a kid at all.
Can I tell you one other thing that they completely blew? A perfect opportunity. Mm-hmm. All right. The cast hasn't done a Star Trek for 10 years.
Yeah.
Right.
They're getting together. All right, it's going to be the first movie. We think, you know, this might be the launching of a great new franchise. We're thinking we're going to see what we can do with it. How about Kirk just shows up on the ship and everybody's already there? Perfect. Okay. You know, right. Let's not take a trope that I would have loved to have seen for a change.
Yeah.
Getting the band back together.
Getting the band back together. We go here and we get Uhura and she's working in a... Yeah. You know,
she's working in a communication
space. McDonald's.
Well, they did. Yeah.
She's running the drive-through with her little ear thing.
But little—that's the funny word you just use—is little.
Right. Exactly.
But they do that in two. And yeah, you're right. They could have used some of that. It's funny that after 10 years and your reunion, and they're making points about everyone being older. The closest band together bits where Spock comes wandering in after his hippie trip didn't work out. And freaking and McCoy looks like he's been living in a cabin somewhere.
I love McCoy's beard. But, that was the best part
for
of
some
the
reason.
Movie.
Perfect opportunity to do that. And they can
for some reason
blow
the,
it.
The only gap story we get is Spock and the Kolinar. And it's the least impressive, interesting. You know what I mean? It's just like so boring because it's Klingon. Klingons are boring. That's what they do. They do boring. Well, Vulcans. Vulcans are boring. Klingons are the opposite of boring.
He almost died.
Klingons are so damn exciting. Vulcans are just boring. And instead of giving us even a little bit, like, can you imagine what Sulu could have been doing when he got called back to the Enterprise?
Right. Any of them. I mean, geez.
Yeah. It was a little depressing.
I think I see where they were going with it. I mean, because it was really a love letter to the ship itself and William Shatner's love for the ship. And
I get it. There's a trope in there. Have you ever noticed that whenever everybody's coming back to the Enterprise after a long time away, Scotty's been there messing with it?
Every time. Mm-hmm. He's always been dinking with it.
Is he enslaved?
And it's not working exactly right still, and there's always some problems.
I never get to leave this thing. I'm stuck here forever.
It's the worst. People keep dying in the transporter.
That did suck. I hate they didn't explain better that was just, you know, because it had bugs in it. It just kind of like, because I was wondering about the statistics. How many people die in that thing? Because they never talk about it any other time.
No, they never do.
There's usually close calls.
I remember it freaking me out as a kid. That part weirded me out because they never really explored that idea in the show where people would die in the stream. And it seemed real grim when I was a kid. Now,
really? Because watching it now, I was like, why aren't they having a bigger reaction to this?
Oh, no, I agree completely.
This, like, they were kind of
send our condolences to the family. Yeah, let's move on. What's for dinner?
They gave Kirk the line, "Oh my God."
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, okay, say that while you're running toward the transporter pad and trip and fall down yelling, you know, like give it something.
Like, that last way I felt, I was like, when the reaction made me think, oh, this must happen a good bit, even though. Because they didn't really overreact. It was kind of like, oh, man, I hate when this happens.
Didn't McCoy complain? I thought he complained more. Maybe it was in the original one and this director's thing is different. But he complained more about transporters and didn't want to be in one. And they had to beg him to get through to beam up to the ship. And none of that was like, in this version. It was weird.
Yeah, well, there was a little bit. No, there was a mention of it. Because I remember while I was watching this and he comes out of the transporter, he's really upset. I was thinking, oh, wow. So this is where the A-team got it for Mr. T. This is a direct borrowing.
It totally
he's just
is.
Like Mr. T. They need to knock him out.
Mm-hmm. Those uniforms, though. Well, we'll get to all that in a minute. There's some trivia. The lady who played V'ger lady,
Aaliyah,
is she died at 49. Sucks. She had all kinds of weird heart stuff. So she had like bypasses before she was out of her. Out of her early 40s and all this kind
beautiful
of stuff.
Beautiful bald lady.
She's gorgeous. I always thought, man, that's the best fake bald cap I've ever seen. And then it turns out, after further reading, it was as shaved as a baby's butt. And they did it for weeks ahead of time. And she was terrified it wouldn't grow back. And she made Gene Roddenberry promise her that it would grow back or something weird like that. There's a bunch of stories about that.
Ursus Kambada and has been in so many movies that I want to do for Film Sack.
I know. The three or four that are in the IMDb quick look amazing.
She was in Megaforce.
Yes.
She was in that She-Wolves of the Wasteland movie. I don't know which First Strike she was in, but she was in a movie called First Strike.
The First Strike.
I want to see it.
That's awesome. The cast hated the uniforms, which required assistance in order to be removed.
Too.
In fact, one of the cast conditions for returning in a sequel was to have new uniforms. Right. So
how do you even get out of these stupid onesies? Why am I wearing a belt buckle?
Yeah.
Why did they do this thing where everybody's wearing the same color? It didn't make sense to me. It's so disproportionate.
Even further in the future where you're even more compliant and sheepish.
But like this doesn't resolve the confusion. This makes it much more confusing to look around and just see everybody the same.
The move in Wrath of Khan to go more militaristic in tone is the right move. There's no question about it. Any of this. Like none of the changes they made that made Khan so good, I disagree with. I think they're all good and they're all the right direction. Just saying there's something here to salvage.
There were militaristic things in this film. You know, permission to come aboard. Standard.
Sure.
Like they were still a part of it.
Kirk looked like a damn boat admiral in the second one.
he did.
Yeah. Right. They all did. They all had that little flap. They looked like, honestly, it looked like they were all going to a French Revolution party.
And, right. This is better. Look at this.
Let's see. Uhura. Her communications earpiece is the only original prop from the Star Trek original series in 1966. Really? They dug it out of storage and realized someone had forgotten to make new ones for the movie and nobody wanted to deal with it, so they just used those.
I'm not making a prop for that crap.
Yeah, that thing is as big as a toilet roll. Freaking huge. Right? Toilet paper roll. I don't know what a toilet roll is.
She was already 47 for this movie.
Oh, wow.
And like, I don't know why. It just kept like, oh, there's 50-year-old Uhura. Every time I saw her, there's 50-year-old Uhura.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Just every time I saw her.
Yeah.
50-year-old Uhura.
I thought Shaft. She looked like a Shaft actor to me. Let's see. Had the movie aired as a 2-hour TV series as it was intended? 2-hour premiere. That's the whole original idea. They were going to reboot the show.
Right.
The original episode title would have been, according to Gene Roddenberry, In Thy Image.
Right.
That makes sense. That's a dumb
title.
They
could have maybe done a 1-hour episode.
Well, which is it? The motion picture or that? Get over it. You got to pick one.
Star Trek, In Thy Image.
You know, what it comes to is titles just weren't a big deal like they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a changeover at some point when everybody started like going to see movies as entertainment.
Mm.
Like, I mean, like it was entertaining to tell everybody you were going to see a movie.
Yeah.
And titles got more important.
Do we have an example? I feel like Star Wars and then The Empire Strikes Back or the Return of the Jedi. I feel like they kind of started that trend.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where it gets really good.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like, before the mid 80s, titles just weren't a big deal.
So since you guys are talking about how 5 is better than 1, I just got to get back down to this. let me just ask you this question. What is the best? Let's have the consensus view. What is the best Star Wars movie?
Star Wars.
Empire Strikes Back.
Okay. Empire. You say Empire. You say Empire. Yeah. Andy, what do you say?
Episode 4, A New Hope.
Okay. So consensus generally is, but we would all give New Hope a close second.
Probably close second. Yeah, actually.
All right. Well, then I'm not crazy. I mean, it's not like you guys are completely on a different planet than I am. Those are all the correct answer.
Were you doing anything else while you were watching this?
No, that's the funny thing. That's the funny thing. Is I am in an uncomfortable chair in front of a computer capturing audio at the same time and kind of into it to the point that it didn't feel as long as obviously it was.
Wow. Right.
I don't know what happened.
But you watched it with your family, right?
No. My daughter wandered in halfway through just to hear a little music and then left. It wasn't even like a family affair. It wasn't like we were excited about, you know, sharing old Star Trek with the kids or any of that. It was just, it clicked somehow. I don't know. Just clicked. Right.
Maybe. You know, Scott, this makes sense to me because years ago, maybe like, I don't know, like 6-7 years ago, I remember coming back and watching it. And for some reason, it hit me the right way. And I remember thinking, this is much better than I remember it. But then when I watched it this time around, I was kind of disappointed. So I don't know. It kind of ebbs and flows for me. And it's kind of like right in the middle of the road.
That might be where I'm at. Some kind of weird phase. I don't know.
I'm in a Star Trek 1 kind of phase right now. I don't know what that's all about.
I don't know. I'm really into stuff that's like TV shows that I'm binging on Netflix or watching or reading comics and stuff. I'm aiming toward darker stuff. Not darker like depressing, but like, I don't know, dramas and things that are just a little more edgy. And
BET?
No BET. Don't have it. But I just wonder if this is maybe an edgier Trek in the original series Pantheon.
I don't think it was.
By edgier, I don't mean like, ooh, we're all edgy. I mean more like it's a little dark.
There was no Right. This is the Empire Strikes Back version of Star Trek. I mean, this is the dark one. This is the one there's very little.
What's the dark one then? What's the dark one?
No. Wrath of Khan is the Empire Strikes Back of Star Trek.
But there's nothing dark about it though.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
What's dark?
About Wrath of Khan.
I mean the tone. I mean the tone. Listen, the overall tone of Wrath of Khan is very swashbuckly action adventure.
No, it's torturing. It's torturing two of the crew with worms in their ears.
But it's swashbuckling.
No, it's not. No,
it's the bad guy winning for a majority of the film.
I don't even mean that though. I mean there's something else. It's like an undertow. It's like okay, I got it. This is why, you know, it does come back to the Kubrick thing. I have a taste for that right now that I used to not have. And I think this is some of that. I think that's what it is. Some of it's up its own butt. I get that. Some of it's way up its own ass. It's so far up its own ass, it's coming out the mouth.
Could it be that you enjoy these long looks at things because modern entertainment is so rapid?
Maybe.
Rapidash? That's a
Rapidash. Rapidash.
But like slapdash, fast, riddling editing nowadays. And maybe you just.
It's
you
the 1920s and everyone's feeling Rapidash. Yeah, I know what you mean. No, exactly. I think you're actually onto something. I kind of crave a different pace right now than I'm used to. And everyone's just screaming in your face for their attention. And so you give me something kind of quiet and slow. Like I just watched Mud. Freaking loved Mud. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I love Mud and stories set in the South generally, Ibn and I talked about this. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of that pace. It's just a different approach.
We like
it. It appeals to me.
Things a little slower.
Yeah, it just makes me feel I could just slow down a little bit.
Just look right in
V'ger's anus, space anus. all right, what else here? Only film in the series to be rated G by the Motion Picture Association of America.
It was PG for Netflix, but that's wild.
PG-13 later, even. Director's cut is now back to PG, and I think that's the one we saw.
PG-13?
Yeah, at some point it was 13. I don't know when that happened. It was must have been later because we didn't even get that rating until, 84 or something?
Right. Why? 83?
I don't know what would have done that.
I mean, I wouldn't want a 10-year-old watching this movie. I mean, just basically because I don't want them to hate film, but
I know that was the scene they edited out of. There's that whole scene with McCoy and his flaccid penis. That was the one.
Oh yeah. That
skinny legs.
Just out of the shower, going, "Damn it, Jim, I'm showering in here," and they showed his wiener, and that was it. They said PG-13. Sorry, that's the best we can do.
He has impotence problems. It's canon. It goes all the way back to when he was Judge Dredd with Chris Pine. Yeah.
Yeah, Judge Dredd with Chris Pine.
That's why he got divorced.
God, you were still crossing the stream.
Oh, the timelines have been altered.
Right.
Decker and Leela, whatever the hell her name was, served as the basis for Star Trek The Next Generation 1987 characters Riker and Troy. They were literally Gene Roddenberry's on paper ideas for those two characters. They eventually evolved into what we got.
It's pretty obvious. But the bolt-on casting of Majel Barrett, like the extra character that Dr. Chapel.
Oh, anytime she said anything, I was like, the computer's talking. The computer's talking.
Loxana Troy. But if you read the credits at the beginning, it's Shatner, Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, Jimmy Doohan, George Takei, Majel Barrett. She's higher credited than Chekhov, Uhura, Ilya, who got way more lines.
Nepotism.
Like 10 times more lines. Yeah, nepotism. There you go.
It is. I guarantee it is. He was married to her for heaven's sakes, or still was. I guess they always were, right? They didn't get divorced, did they?
I don't understand why they credited Stephen Collins, like 11th. Like he was way more important.
He was Decker, right?
Yeah, Pricker.
Pricker. Here's the deal with Pricker. You know what? Let's talk about him right here. So I don't know why all the good and the bad Star Trek movies have to do this. Always there's the ancillary character that isn't part of the crew normally. Always. Yeah. Every time. Always. If it's not Veronica's closet lady, or if it's not her, it's a chick from Sex and the City. And if it's not her, it's the I can't think of her name, the black lady in the Picard one, where she's rolling around on she's working with Cochrane and then goes up to the ship with him and freaks out.
Yeah.
I really like her, but I can't think of her name. Why do we have that guy or that lady every freaking time?
Well, we had to have something to piss off Shatner.
Well, but
the thing is, they didn't actually ever explain why Kirk was so pissed off at him and mean to him.
No.
It was kind of out of Kirk's character.
Right.
I don't understand it.
It was cocky. Well, Kirk, it was a Kirk weird competition accept. Thing.
I think it was set up a bigger story arc of Kirk not being able to accept a desk job, basically.
Well, and keep in mind, this was the basis for a TV show that never happened. So they were they meant to carry that on and say, oh, here's this guy that's, you know, kind of Kirk's equal in terms of vibrato and excitement and whatever, kind of the Riker type.
Right.
And those two things are going to clash or whatever. I kind of get where they were going with that. But every one of these movies, all of them have it. Even the one with the whales, you got that chick who ran the whale museum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't need somebody to be the eyes of the audience in a movie like this. It isn't like they're all ununderstandable aliens. I know who Picard is. I know who Kirk is. I don't need somebody else to go, oh, now I really get who Kirk is, because this other guy who's just an average Joe makes it all make sense.
Help explain it. Yeah.
I really don't get it. To me, it's their own trope, and I don't know why they do it every time. And they didn't even do it with I want to say the new stuff had something like that.
Oh, tons of it. Like then the TV shows, tons of it.
No, the new movies, the Abrams movies.
Yeah. The new motion pictures.
Maybe they broke away from it a little bit.
See, you need the motion picture in there. Otherwise, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, even the 2009 one, you had two Spocks. It's kind of the same problem. It's like, oh, what do we need? Do we really need an extra Spock? Why do we have to have an extra Spock exactly in your story?
Tale of two Spocks.
It's like if they don't have that character, they got to have time travel. And if they don't have that, they got to have both. It's like, what are you doing to me? Three. Who is three? In three, it was who? Who was the odd man out in that? There was somebody, right?
Was it Christopher Lloyd Klingon?
I guess. Oh, I guess. A named Klingon. That's how you got to look at it.
Well, you had Savick. It just wasn't Kirstie Alley. You had...
You had Kirk's son, right?
Alterna Savick.
Oh, and Kirk's son was in it. That's another one. And two, it was the mom and the son.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like any of that stuff. Plus, that guy looked like the greatest American hero, and that cracked me up.
Oh, it did.
Kirk's son did. Anyway.
One of my favorite tropes. All over Star Trek.
Okay.
Musgrove.
Oh, wait. Hit the wrong one. Go ahead.
Permission to speak freely.
Like, oh, yeah.
That is a Star Trek staple,
sure,
man.
Sure,
you don't get people don't tell you what they're really thinking unless you give them permission to speak freely.
When they ask for it, you know they mean business, though. Right?
Yeah. And then only then do they put their conflicting words in such a way that you kind of agree with them. Yeah, you're kind of right.
Yeah,
I was being a dick. You're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was being a Deckard, totally.
Being a prickard. Hey, let me blow your minds. Prior to Star Trek Into Darkness, 2013, last year,
This
film had the longest running time of any Star Trek movie. And until the release of Star Trek 2009, it was the only one to break the 2-hour mark. The two new ones are the two record holders post the motion picture. Mm, nothing else in the Star Trek movie franchise was ever as long as this.
Because you can tell a story in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Especially with sci-fi. Sci-fi in particular, as much as the hardcore sci-fi nerds love to argue the contrary, you can tell a story in 90 minutes in sci-fi. That's the beauty of sci-fi stories.
So why do you think Abrams went long then? What do you think his reasoning was?
Oh, he wanted to pack in every little possible thing that he could possibly get off to.
And they didn't feel long. I mean, those felt... I guess if you put enough action in there, they don't feel as long. Oh,
right. And that's the thing. Like, In the recent one, the whole thing where Khan and Kirk fly from one ship to another, totally unnecessary. Like, totally unnecessary. That everything about that dark ship and everything, totally unnecessary. But they, I mean, yeah, Abrams.
You know, I haven't seen
an opportunity for action.
Brian, you haven't seen the new one?
No, oh, I no, got I've it seen. Over. No, I haven't seen it. I've got it right over here. I haven't got to see it yet.
Oh, you should watch it. It's fun. It's a good
time.
Well,
no kidding.
Yeah, it's a good time. I feel like at the end of... I kind of have come to a conclusion now, though. And maybe this was also what I was craving in this movie and kind of got more of. Was, even though it was kind of up its own butt, I just got a little more something under the surface. Whereas like these Abrams movies, which I really enjoyed, they're pretty... They're like an arcade game. I mean, there's nothing going on here that's like... deep. Right. There's no deep thinking.
It's not Roddenberry.
No, right. And it's fine, and there's a place for that, but it's way more Star Wars than it ever was Star Trek.
Right.
And that's probably why Abrams will do fine with Star Wars, because he already knows how to do this. But I could have used a little bit more in the new ones. It was just a little deeper, a little thicker, a little, I don't know, a little more cerebral than just boom, 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 big explosions running around doing stuff.
You're saying the motion picture was more cerebral?
I'm saying there are there are aspects to the motion picture that are more
cerebral. Because I promise you, if you put your mind to it, you could sum up the entire film in 15 words.
Like, come on.
There is so little to this movie.
Challenge accepted.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's I'm willing to admit I may be in a phase here. I'm just saying it felt like I was getting something more than just arcade. You know, I was getting an RPG, not an arcade racing game. That's the best way I can compare those.
We're going through a Star Trek motion picture phase right now.
Yeah, and there are times when I want an arcade game experience, and there are times I want a deep, meaningful Skyrim experience. It's like I need both in my life. It's just sometimes I want one more. Your argument that this movie isn't that anyway is an interesting one, because you may be right, and I may just be blindfolded here. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with me.
Like, you can take other movies that have these long, loving shots, like, say, Dances with Wolves, long, loving shots of the prairie, right?
Yeah.
And you can't sum up that movie quickly. There's a lot that happens in that movie.
Oh, I want to bet I can sum the whole thing up in two words.
Well, do it. I want to hear it, though. I want to hear it.
You can trash it, sure.
Okay, go. Give it.
John Dunbar.
I knew it. I knew that's what
you could,
it was going to be.
You could definitely trash it, but I'm just saying, like, it's a complicated story. This movie, the Star Trek The Motion Picture, is so simple that you feel like they were padding it, you know?
Yeah.
Adding on.
Well, they definitely padded it. There's no question about that. Yeah. Yeah. If there's anything this movie is, it's padded.
It could have been an hour-long episode. And still had a lot of room for commercials.
I think maybe I just like spaceship porn. That's a good way to put it.
Like, let's watch each light turn on in sequence on the Enterprise.
That's cool. It makes me want to play Eve all the time, even though I really don't want to play Eve, but I want to look at Eve because I just love it. The detail and the way stuff looks against that nebula and the long space travel. And I love that stuff. That's my thing, man. That's my vibe. It's my jam.
Now I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reason to play Eve is to get your ship out of space dock and fly it around a bit.
Right. That's cool. The rest of it sucks. And in this case, kind of the same. Like, looking at that ship with its throbbing sphincter thing.
Dude.
With all the lights, I just thought, that's so cool.
V'ger's anus was way overused in this movie.
Yeah.
What was the
clam shut?
Every time I saw, I wanted, like, you could make a drinking game in this movie. It's like, every time Kirk gets mad at Pricker, take a drink. Every time you see V'ger's anus, take a drink.
Yeah, and the one time he pinches off Spock and shoots him back out toward the ship. That was great.
And Kirk just happened to be out there so perfectly waiting. Yeah. Oh, here he comes. I got him.
So you're telling me all that stuff was CGI'd up, some of that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why it looked good then.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed now.
It was pretty obvious for me to spot the stuff that had been redone because it looks so different.
I went in naive. I just didn't even know. I just went in naive and had no idea. I didn't know what they did. But some of the Vulcan stuff, you're right, looked better than other Vulcan stuff. Yeah. Like at one point, they're green screening off into the sunset. And I went, oh, that looks bad. But then close-ups would be like, oh, no, wait a minute. That's not too bad. So, yeah, whatever. I know I keep coming back to this. I can't help it. Mm-hmm. I remember as a kid also being completely freaked out when Chekhov's hand got burned.
Oh, yeah, right.
Really bothered me when I was growing up. Now, nothing. No big deal. I barely heard it. But
shut up, Chekhov.
Then I thought it was a big bubbly mess. And again, I might be crossing this with the Mort Drucker art once again. Because I think
I posted a link, by the way, to that.
Yeah.
Oh, you did. To that whole thing.
The whole thing.
I was so into that. Oh, the whole thing? No way.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this.
Spread there.
Oh, he was so good. Yeah. No one got me the way that guy got me. So let's see. I just want to see Chekhov's hand. Let's see. Sounds like a book you're supposed to read.
They are roasting marshmallows above the remains.
Yeah, they should be. That's just how it should be. Where is he burning his hand? I know this happens. Maybe not. Maybe I don't have that in my head. All I know is the whole idea of Chekhov burning his hand horribly was just terrifying to me as a kid, as a 9-year-old kid. And then here we are all this time later, and I just kind of laughed at that part.
Well, it's because nobody else really does anything about it, too. Like, Kirk still just stares straight ahead at the screen. Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. In fact, doesn't he just kind of nod to the left and go, medic, and then goes back to what he's doing?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, some of that stuff was
they screw dick-ish. Him over every time. Yeah. It's like, let's stick one of those earwigs in his ear.
How come proton torpedoes are so shiny? You know the ones? They're
like, right?
They've always been. It's not just this movie. It's like,
Because they double as don't they double as caskets too when they shoot people out?
Yeah, but why are they all? Why do they all, like, you know what I mean though? Like big giant beams of light rotating around them as they fire. Yeah. I don't know. We got to get those audiences excited for a torpedo. Let's see what else we got here. Yeoman Rand. Did we talk about her? We don't care about
her. Didn't talk about her, but it was surprising to see her and she kind of disappears after the first couple minutes. She gets McCoy on board and then, all right, I'm going to be in my quarters.
Chick in the bucket? Are we willing
no,
to go?
Not really, no? Because it really, not really there to accomplish anything other than she's here too.
Right. The transporter was a chick in the bucket because after they used it at the beginning, that was pretty shit.
That's true, actually, yeah.
Okay.
It's basically just a roll the dice, and if you come up snake eyes, then you're going to get zorked in the transporter.
Nurse Chapel feels a little chick in the bucket to me. She was there. She resurfaced once or twice, but she was barely there.
But it's not a problem that needs to be solved. I mean, she's around. It's you know.
She's explained, right?
I like that
we're getting the whole band back together. And
Nurse Chapel, not a problem we need to solve.
How do you solve a problem like Chapel?
Yeah. Let's see. How is Spock a Betazoid, I wrote down? Oh, because he was feeling everybody's feelings. I didn't think they could do that. How's a Vulcan doing that?
Right. He's a lot more sensitive in this movie. But I think it's because he had been doing all that training.
Oh.
Maybe he was still having
to mind meld remotely. Like mind meld remotely with V'ger.
Wireless mind melding?
Yes, right. Exactly. Bluetooth.
G wireless, yeah.
I always feel a little bit dirty after I see a Vulcan mind meld. Because I always feel like they're kind of like just
invading him.
Yeah, they're having some kind of Vulcan face.
Well, and it's like the hand has long fingernails and they're putting it really aggressively on the face. Mm-hmm.
And the person's always making that face like, oh,
yeah.
Like that's that's kind of sex.
Pain!
Like that?
Sex pain. Yeah, that.
Yeah, totally like that. What else? Is that it? I guess that's it.
There's lots. Oh, man, we could go on for days.
There's so much.
Yeah.
How is there a Star Trek movie without red shirts?
Weren't any. There was a Star Trek movie with Moose Knuckle crew, and that was it.
So much.
The guys in the white, tight whites, that I think they were kind of what you would consider the red shirts.
You mean the ones that were going sparring later?
Yeah, they were always running across everything, just running. Oh, no, the security guys are like the ones in three.
Right.
They had that. Like they have the big
taekwondo. Yeah. I got a taekwondo sparring session later
Those
on.
Those guys are great, dude.
Yes.
Yeah. They look like Captain. Somebody in the. I did a little contest in our Facebook Tadpole page, and somebody said they look like Captain. What they call him? Captain Federation or something.
Right.
Like some superhero from the 40s.
I've got this.
Goes a little long as a note I wrote here. It goes a little long.
A little bit.
Yeah. I'll admit to that. It's fine. I don't mind. All right. How about some clips? You guys want to do clips?
Oh, please. Please. Right. Yeah. Love the clips.
Here we go. Episode 200's clips, everybody. Let's start with the music we all know and love. It's really weird to hear that.
Best thing in the movie.
Yeah.
Best thing in the movie.
I think the whole soundtrack was pretty damn good. Overall, good score, good everything.
I want the 65-minute version of that score, though.
Is there one?
More than that, and it's repetitive.
My favorite one is still the theme I think he did for First Contact. I love that one. Man, that's
really
so good. All right. Kirk takes control. So here's some of that. 14
seconds. I'm on my way to a meeting with Admiral Uhura, which will not last more than 3 minutes. Report to me on the Enterprise in 1 hour.
Report to you, sir.
It is my intention to be on that ship. Following that meeting, report to me in 1 hour.
3 minutes.
And it's you know, kind of a Spider-Man Uncle Ben story there, because that's the guy who ends up getting zorked in the transporter.
I told
him an hour to go to be here if he wouldn't have followed my directions.
Sonok.
When Nimoy was not going to be in this movie, he was focused on stage work and stuff and was feeling not very happy with Star Trek. He wasn't going to be in this movie. He was refusing to do it. And they finally talk him into it. But before he refused, according to everything I'm reading, this other dude, that guy, was supposed to be the new Vulcan. Right. At least the character, maybe not that actor. And that was going to be him carrying through. And especially it was going to be a series. It was going to be a whole new series with everybody regular except Spock. It'd be this new guy. So they have them fry him immediately in the freaking thing.
There's a great trope here, by the way.
Is there a good trope?
The whole, why don't they make the whole plane out of that stuff?
Yeah.
In this case, it's, okay, you just lost your Vulcan, so you need a Vulcan. If Vulcans are so great, why isn't every post manned by a Vulcan?
Yeah. Everyone should be a Vulcan.
Why do you only have one Vulcan?
Yeah.
They're only good for science officers.
That's right.
That's it.
But they're stronger, they're faster, like they're smarter. Everyone should be a Vulcan if you want to min-max this sucker through the moon.
I agree. All right.
Not impervious to lightning, though, as we find out.
Yeah. Right. This is true. All right. Here's Captain. Would you call him Peckler? Dorkler? What is it?
Pricker.
Pricker. Pricker. Pricker. Here's the Captain. Poor Captain Pricker is what I wrote.
Where's Captain Decker?
He's in engineering, sir. He he doesn't know.
Yeah. You caught me in a situation.
Oh my. All right. How about a cool computer? Oh yeah, I'll give it points for cool computer voice. Here's that. There you go.
Engineering to all decks. Auxiliary power test in 3 minutes. Mark.
I'm a fan of like.
Did the really, ambient sound need to be so loud?
No, it didn't.
Because it was killing me.
Yeah. And it's so much better than the intruder alert, intruder alert. God,
shut that thing up.
Yeah, the ambient noise on the bridge was pretty bad too. Everywhere was bad. They didn't do like the show. They did something very dumb and worse. I wrote this. Wonder if this guy's going to be trouble. Here you go.
Report to the bridge, Commander. Immediately.
Aye, sir.
All right, so
Dickler or whatever.
Yeah, Ted Bricker is he's a commander contrarian trope, yeah, you know, right. Like the guy who argues with Vader in episode 4.
Yeah,
gets the choke on,
or he's Jellicoe against Riker in the next gen.
Yep,
that whole thing. I don't like that trope. I find it tiresome.
Right.
Like it. Here's the weird death sound in the transporter. I like strange death sounds in these movies we watch, and here's one here.
This one succeeds.
Gosh, dang.
Yeah, that thing's still a little freaky after,
I agree.
After, you know, 30, 40 years, so whatever it's been.
So they weren't able to transport the people, but they were able to transport the sounds they were making.
Yeah, I guess you only get to be emotional Klingon Vulcan when that thing goes bad.
Yeah.
You die.
I thought that was just coming through the intercom system that Kirk, by the way, anytime there's a major emergency, the captain is always the best man to work the transport.
Always. Pushes past you and grabs the
Move
controls.
Out of the way. Let me show you how to do this.
Yeah, he's been trained in it. He knows. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, can you imagine? Can you imagine if the cable guy came to your house to fix the cable and the Super Bowl was starting in just a few minutes and it needed to get done and you just pushed him out of the way and started ripping wires?
That's right. Even worse, right? His manager comes in with a tie.
Yeah.
He's like, move!
Like the president of Comcast just jumps out of a helicopter and throws the cable guy out of the way.
Here is the most annoying sound in Star Trek the Motion Picture.
We are under attack.
Good Lord.
We are under attack.
That's bad. How about what? I don't know what this is.
Hello, Ilya.
Dicker.
Oh, I thought she called him
That's
Dick.
That's what I thought she Dicker. That's what I kept thinking. Dicker. That's why I thought her name was his.
Hello, Ilya.
Dicker.
Dick hurt. Dick hurt.
Dick hurt. Dick hurt. You saved me, Dick Hurt.
You saved, thank you, Dick Hurt.
All right, here's, I think this is McCoy. Yeah, here you go.
Why is any object we don't understand always called a thing?
It's a pretty good line.
It is.
McCoy probably, if you're going to give it to somebody, you give it to him. He was probably the best.
He's the everyman kind of thing, yeah.
He was good. I liked him a lot. All right, here's need, what? I don't know what this is. Oh, Shatner needing somebody.
I need you. Badly.
He's actually outside the Enterprise right then.
Yeah.
Talking to the ship.
Yep. Time to impact? I don't know what this is.
Time to impact.
20 seconds.
Oh, it's that weird warpy.
My voice is changing.
But that was the wormhole, which was the wormhole effect, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big vagina.
Oh, no,
thing.
We've been zapped into a giant spirograph.
Yeah.
I'm tripping, yo.
I'm tripping. I'm mad balls or whatever they'd say. All right. Spock speaks. Here you go.
With your permission, I will now discuss these fuel equations with the engineer.
I think he had a little bit of trouble getting back into character the first couple of days because he totally talked. I'm sorry, because he talked like a robot like the first couple of days. Mm-hmm. Like it seemed like.
If they were filming, what do you call that? When you start at the top and sequentially or whatever?
Right, sequentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then exactly. I agree with you because it did seem, he seemed off at the beginning. And I know he's supposed to seem a little off. He just failed his test on his home planet.
His Hoctu, what was it?
Whatever, what's it called?
It's the colonar.
The colonar, the colonoscopy, he failed.
The colonar.
All right, will you please sit down, as this person says.
Will you please sit down?
Such a great Shatner way to tell someone to sit down.
Yeah,
that spread is. It out into like 10 seconds of talking. All right, continued. Oh, this is good, right?
Continuing friendship messages on all frequencies, sir.
I didn't know they send out friendship messages.
That's what I thought, too. I kept thinking, when they send, like, little happy faces coming in.
Yay, yeah.
Hi.
This emoji back in the day.
Hello, everybody. Transmit now, Spock. What?
Bob. Transmit now.
Wait.
Bob. Transmit now.
What are you waiting on, Spocky Spock? Bob.
All right, this is a good one here.
I believe the closed orifice leads to another chamber.
Ooh, hey.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
As soon as I heard that line, I knew, well, there's going to be a clip.
I was hoping you would also put that's what she said on him saying that it disappeared into what we used to call a black hole.
I could have kept that going. You're right.
Yeah.
It would have worked. But now I can use what this anytime I want.
What we used to call a black hole. Yeah. What are you talking about, dude?
If you ever wanted to hear yourself say Spock in a helmet. Here's your chance to hear what that sounds like. Here you go.
Spock.
There you go. All muffled and like,
Spock. Hey, Spock, you okay, buddy? I see you just got shit out of that thing over there.
Here's the Kirk unit right here.
Kirk unit.
Kirk unit.
Kirk unit.
Kirk
Come
unit.
On. How stupid is it? You cannot respect anything that can't call you something than other than Kirk unit or unit. Carbon yeah. unit.
Right. Kirk unit. Spock unit. And she only did it with Kirk, though.
Yeah, she only did it with right. She called everybody carbon unit except for Kirk unit.
She had her little neck diamond that made her...
Yeah,
basically just that was, ripped off somebody's hand in Logan's Run and stuck on her neck.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, she'd been smoking a lot.
That's what it looked like.
And Spock at one point calls it a sensor. It's a sensor.
All right. They sure use this a lot, right? That was the thing you heard all the time.
And boy, was I tired of it.
Yeah. It was kind of a
space foghorn.
Right. Bass guitar, just
the beginning of the final countdown, only without any good parts.
Final countdown.
It's kind of like they would, but they used it like, oh, things are better. The V'ger lady seems like she knows me. And then, oh, no. And then they play that. All right. There's go ahead.
Did you catch that the trailers for this movie back in the day were narrated by Orson Welles?
Yeah, they're cool.
Really?
I meant to actually cap one.
I dumped one into chat if you want to. But
is it a YouTuber?
It's just really cool.
Let's
like
play it
Orson
real quick.
Welles.
Why not? Let's play this. Here you go. It's a shorty thing here. Come on now. So what are we doing? Here we go. Paramount. Okay. Ooh, that's some rough sound in the footage. Ooh, it's all right ear. It's all right ear. Okay, left ear now. All right. Oh, gosh. I feel like I'm
doesn't this make adventure. Doesn't this make you want to go see
it's
the
just
movie?
Beginning.
Oh, here you go. I have a memory of this.
Really?
William Shatner, take us out, is Captain James T. Kirk.
Do you think the audience freaked out?
Leonard Nimoy is Mr. Spock. DeForest Kelly is Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy.
Okay. All right.
James Doohan is Lieutenant Commander Montgomery Scott.
All right. Got it.
George Takei.
This is a weird trailer, dude. Sulu.
Major Barrett is Dr. Christine Chapel.
And she's barely in it.
Koenig is Lieutenant Pavel Chekhov. Nichelle Nichols is Lieutenant Commander Uhura.
They do more casting. They're just going to keep doing the whole casting.
Yep. Yep.
That's terrible.
That's fantastic.
That's awful.
I'd like that for every single movie ever from now on.
That'd be all right, wouldn't it?
No.
All right. Final clip from the movie.
Patrick Stewart is Professor Xavier. But this other guy here is
also Professor Xavier.
This other guy. Here's the final clip I captured.
Lava tubes.
All right, moving on. That was totally from Star Trek. Don't let anyone tell you.
It was on Vulcan. Yeah.
It's time for the list. Oh, Nichelle Nichols, supporting a sweet Shaft era hairdo. Check. More package revealing uniforms than you can shake a stick at. Check. And finally, Leonard Nimoy looking very much like he'd rather be anywhere else but here. Check. Star Trek connections. Lulz. Lulz. We did it for the lulz. Let's get right to soundtrack. I really liked it. I thought it was good. Yeah, was right good. Up even there. Even that I could live with. And I don't even know if that would be, like, if you got the soundtrack, I don't even know if those are on there. Those might just be.
Well, it was, the first appearance of that song that we all love that we've been talking about. But did we know how much we would be hearing that in our futures?
Nope, we didn't. I still say the best theme is Voyager. It's my favorite of all the Trek themes.
I was looking through my soundtrack collection, and I don't have all the Star Trek movies because you don't need all the Star Trek movies. There's a lot of redundancy in there. But this is definitely one of them. You know, this one. Four
of all the Star Trek movies, this is definitely one.
Definitely one of them.
This is one of the ones you want to have. You want to have this one, and the fourth one, and the seventh one, and the second to most recent one. Mm. The first of the
plain Star Trek,
Michael Giacchino.
No, the Nemesis one, right? Oh no, you're right. The 2009 one. Yeah, that one was really good.
Yeah, but you don't want all of them because
just duplicate them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got a Twitter post here. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Star Trek, the motionless picture. Take away all the waiting and doing nothing from this movie, and it could have been 140 characters long.
Oh,
right.
See, I get it. Brian Dunaway.
Star Trek, the original motion picture, like a big four-headed alien. It just goes on forever and is occasionally bumpy.
These Klingons were crazy bumpy heads, man.
What was the one? There was one guy, one alien that I don't really think they talked about too much, but it was the really big foreheaded dude.
Blue.
Who was that guy?
Right, with the shaggy gray hair.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
they didn't talk about
him. How do you make an alien in Star Trek? Easy. Some kind of weird forehead abnormality.
Yeah. That's actually just a guy who goes to every convention.
Actually, that's true. The group, when he talked in front of the group of the ship, people, those were all fans, unpaid extra fans that were all there for some convention.
That used to be my joke about how Lucas added more band and singers to the cantina scene in episode 4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I used to joke that he just went to a convention and asked some people if they'd just stand around and sing and just morph them into the movie.
Why not? Yeah. Why the hell not? Brian Ibbett, give us yours.
Star Trek, it's going to be very similar, I think. Star Trek, the motion picture. How do you fit a one-hour Star Trek episode into a two-hour film? Tons of longing gazes at the exterior of the Enterprise and lots of slow motion wormhole action.
You're at 900 characters now.
Nine. Those might have just been nine.
Yeah, a lot of O's. This just handed to me. Alternate title, everybody. We finally made it to the space sphincter, or all about our future video game. Oh, no, sorry. All our future video games take up a 15-foot floor space. And that's what I learned.
Why do they call it a tractor beam anyway?
Yeah, what's the deal?
Yeah, that was so condescending the way he said that.
Yeah,
it's a tractor beam. Hey, we're moving forward. It's a tractor beam.
It's a tractor beam.
Got emails.
I don't see a tractor.
Yeah, nobody sees a tractor. Got emails here. Dominic from Newport Beach, California. Says the following. Hey, Sacker, sent you guys 3 Blu-rays of Gattaca, but now the film is already on Netflix. Just making it the perfect time to sack. Just a suggestion. Love the show.
Thought he was going to ask us to send him back.
Yeah. Right?
We were just watching that today. That's funny.
You were?
I'm just a couple just watching miles Gattaca? Away from Newport Beach.
Well, hang on to it.
Because we got to watch it for the show. Yeah.
Dominic's...
And Dominic, we're talking about doing that... Oh, right before Nertacular.
Oh, lovely.
We're going to watch Gattaca the week before Nertacular.
He'll be there, too. He says see you in July, so that'll be good.
All right. Newport Beach boy. Nice.
Jeff Roden says, I have heard you on many occasions say that you are a fan of post-apocalyptic movies. So I was wondering if you have seen the one from 1975 called A Boy and His Dog starring Don Johnson.
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe you could sack it. I would like to hear what you think of this movie. It is now IMDb, or here's how IMDb describes the movie, gives the description. It sounds pretty good. Thanks for doing what you do, Jeff. I agree. That's one that I've always meant to see anyway. Sounds right. Sackable as hell. So
it's a good. I remember it being enjoyable movie when I was younger. So I don't know.
How old is it? Do we know?
It's pretty old. What did he say? 75?
Mm, oh yeah, he did say 75.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen it.
No houseboat. No wicker shoes.
Jason Robards is in it. He's cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's some connection too. They're like, that's used as a film marquee in the background. A Boy and His Dog is used as some marquee in another post-apocalyptic film. And I can't remember what it was.
I'm
sure it's in IMDb under those connections.
I'm having a feeling about that too. Something about what you're saying is.
I am adding it to the Armageddon list.
All right.
Cool.
Put it in there.
And for henceforth, I will think we already watched it.
Yeah, you will.
And it's appropriate for Film Sec because they're doing a remake.
Yay! Are they really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, look at that. A Boy and His Dog. Coming soon to a theater near you. All right. Thank you guys for your emails. You can send us more emails at filmsec@gmail.com. All right. That's it for that. Hey, next movie. We are really doing Nothing But Trouble next week, whether we like it or not. We probably won't like it, but that's that movie. we have the DVDs. They were sent to us. I have one right here. And I couldn't get it to work. Like, computers do not like this disc. I don't know what's happening.
But. It has some serious hard-coded encryption to be Nothing But Trouble, really. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it is Nothing But Trouble at this point. They just don't want me to see it. But Brian Dunaway and I figured out a way to work it. We got it. We're good.
I am dreading it.
I am too, very much. Like, I hate this movie.
I'm not dreading it.
This is the ups and the downs. Like, I was so looking forward to Star Trek The Motion Picture episode 200 of Film Sack, by the way. Twitter post mashup coming up later.
Yeah, stay tuned for that.
And now I just want to crawl under my bed and never, ever, ever.
Come on, man. The Digital Underground is in this. Come on.
Yeah.
I used to like them.
A young Demi Moore, and you know, come on.
The reason, not that young a Demi Moore. The reason that this is came up at all is because I have talked about it being one of the only two movies I've walked out of. So
wow.
So this is Scott taking a bullet.
It's my Johnny Mnemonic.
Yes.
Right, Scott's Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah, it's Brian's, or no, it's my
Minority Report.
Minority Report. That's the day. Yeah.
And Johnny Mnemonic. And do you guys think that I would like to see how Dan Aykroyd really has aged opposed to the character he plays in that movie? Because I think it's
he
pretty
looks great right now. I think he's looking awesome.
Though, if your selling point on the movie is forget everything else, there's a cameo appearance by Digital Underground. you're already setting me up for failure. By the way, there's like 9 people in Digital Underground. Name 3. I'm spotting you, Humpty Hump and Tupac Shakur.
That's the only two I knew.
What else you need?
It really is the only two I knew.
All right.
I'm a very remote fan. I like what you're selling, but I don't really own much of it.
Yeah.
This is referred to as a funny foursome and a laugh-filled lark. So
no.
Not that kind of foursome, so don't get excited.
Lark. It's a lark.
Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, Demi Moore. So there you go.
Now that I've set myself up, I'm going to watch it and love it.
It's not going to be the worst thing we've ever watched for Film Sack.
You don't think? Because I am seriously concerned that it might be.
No.
Okay. All right. What's the worst thing? Have we decided that yet? What is the worst thing we've
what
seen?
What is the worst thing? That's a really good question. I mean...
When I was making this this mashup of Twitter posts, I was shocked at some of our first ones. Like, because the Twitter posts in the mashup are only from the first 50 movies we watched.
Yeah.
And I was looking at like, wow, we really actually watched Lawnmower Man. I can't believe it. It's such a bad movie. And like so many of them, Omega Man was really, really bad. You know, the I Am Legend original. And
I'm trying to remember. I know there was something that was so bad. It was like, God, I just had such a hard time even getting through it. And I think my entire episode of Film Sack was just me saying, I hated this. This was the worst thing you've ever made me do.
What was that? Because you really did dislike it.
I can't
it.
Remember what it was. I'm sure somebody will be able to write in and say, Brian, that movie was X.
It's funny that you've blocked it out.
I completely blocked it out. Yes.
Yeah, I remember you were really adamant.
It was something.
There was nothing
Hudson,
we could
Hudson
do.
Hawk.
And it wasn't Johnny Mnemonic either.
No.
Hudson Hawk needs to be the comparison for Nothing But Trouble. Hudson Hawk was.
Oh, see, you can't
bad.
Do that to me though, because that's my.
He loved that.
That was my guilty pleasure. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
That's my. Right. That was my Star Trek the Motion Picture for Scott.
Randy, what is yours? Was it Troll 2?
It was definitely Troll 2 for me. Yeah, that was
really that was so fun though.
I loved Troll 2. I'd do that one
so
again.
Fun, bad.
If we ever had a repeat one, that's the one. If we ever did one as a commentary track as a repeat, yeah. I'd do that one.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'd like us to repeat Flash Gordon.
I'd like us to watch Troll 2 like with an audience, like with a, you know,
that'd be so much fun.
2016 yeah. Nerdtacular or something.
Dude, I'd watch, I would totally do Flash Gordon in that same venue. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're taking a moment on episode 200.
Yeah, look at us reminiscing. Yeah,
talk about films.
Yeah.
I just want to say again, if you just are like, oh, I'm going to listen to an old episode of Film Sack, episode 95, Smokey and the Bandit. Trust me on this.
Yeah, really.
I think that's a high watermark.
Really good one. It's right. It's up there with like, what's his name?
What's his name? You got me.
Johnny
Burt Reynolds.
I've said over and over that our best episode is
not Street Fighter, not
Universal Soldier,
not Renegade or
Pearl. Oh, Retrograde. You're talking about Retrograde.
No, yeah. Not
Retrograde.
That was shit.
Yeah. See, I would say I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Nothing But Trouble is gonna be better than Retrograde.
I think you're right. How could it not be? Mm-hmm. That Bruce Campbell
and
thing
that
we
wasn't
saw
even
was
the worst
bad.
Thing that we saw.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, the Bruce Campbell with the giant insects.
Yeah.
That was like the third or fourth episode, wasn't it?
Best early. Episode of Film Sack, still Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry was pretty good.
Listen to that episode if you want to hear our best episode. If you want to hear our So Bad That It's Good episode, 126, What Hot American Summer.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. There's some conversation in that one. A lot of people really, really like our recent elevator conversation from...
That was fun.
What was that from? Not Congo. What was it? It was like two weeks ago.
It was Resident Evil because she got killed in the elevator, right?
Right, right. But they like those kind of esoteric what if questions. We should do the more of those. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys hear me get pop quizzed on Current Geek?
Yes.
Film Sack?
That was episode
13 of Current Geek. Out of the blue, Scott just goes, oh, and your pop quiz is all about Film Sack. And then starts hitting me with questions that I just pulled right out of my ass. It was like someone had wadded up the answers and shoved them into my anus, and I had to pull them out. It was amazing.
You were nailing it. You totally you came within a point of winning or whatever it was. You didn't quite win, though, right? What was the deal?
I think Tom gave us a tie.
Tom's scoring is so jacked.
I love
scoring. That's pretty fun, though.
I love the scoring.
It's pretty fun. It's weird, but fun. All right. Well, there you go. So next week, Nothing But Trouble. After that, great movies to come. And certainly stay tuned here on this very episode for this mashup Randy's talking about, because that will be at the end of the show. It's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is our website. You can go there, check out previous episodes, links to everything, commentary tracks, all that stuff's there. Filmsack.com. Email us at filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, we can be found at Filmsack. Here's to another 200, everybody.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Screw you, Pricker.
Pricker.
Oh, right.
So what did we learn? Let's go around the table. What was important to you? What was your favorite part of the film? If you could sum it up as your little Twitter post about why you either hated or loved this movie, how would you do it? Let's start with Brian Dunaway again.
All right, that sounds good. I'm sorry.
Sorry, there's a crowd at my house. There's a whole bunch of people down there. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Can you get them to chant "The President Lives"?
I might be able to, actually. No, they're too far to tell them. That would be classic.
And that was basically going to be my sum up. The President Lives, if I was going to Twitter something.
You just say The President Lives. I think that's
The President Lives, because that sums up the whole movie. That and apparently the aliens are in a clown car because they kept coming out of that one tank.
I forgot that clown car thing. Oh, my God.
I forgot about that. Brian Dunaway, what did you learn from this movie?
Species 4, more teat shots than a documentary about a mug farm. Yeah.
So let's go around the table. Let's start with Randy. Randy, if you could sum this movie up in a Twitter post, what would it be?
Graffiti can be a very effective, very moving character in and of itself. And all you need is a wall and some paint and maybe some poop.
There's no maybe about it.
And a healthy helping of poop.
You gotta have poop. Brian Ibbett, how would you sum it up?
Even when you're dressed as a knight, kissing the tip of another man's sword, it's a little gay.
Yeah. That was a little weird.
To sum this film up in 120 140 characters, or less. Let's start with Randy. Go.
Splatgetty Western, man. It's like... You gotta decide what you're gonna do with your life.
Oh my god!
That's the best Blake impersonation I've heard since Anthony Michael Hall in Weird Science.
Who did we not do? Oh, Ibbot.
Yeah. A movie about teen angst edited by kids with ADHD and a Starbucks triple espresso.
Nice. Very nice. My favorite part of that was, oh, Ibbot. And you go, yes. And then you went, yeah. That was great.
That's my name.
Hey, that's me. All right. Well,
yeah.
Brian Ibbot, do you have a Twitter post in 140 characters or less about this
Brian
movie?
Do you want me to do what it
I
again?
Say? Did I say Ibbot? I meant Dunaway.
Brian. It was so short, he forgot it already. Just like I do when I read Twitter. But yes, the Omega Man is kind of like I Am Legend, but with an old white guy.
That's your Twitter. That's the best one ever. It's like the new movie, but with a white guy.
Old white guy.
Oh my gosh, dude, that was funny. Let's do Randy this time. Randy, sum it up in 140 characters, if you please.
Oh my. Let's see. A maze in which you can easily lift yourself up and see over the walls to the goal, if not just hop over, is not a maze. It's an obstacle course.
That's a frickin' truth. And now you, Brian Ibbot, please.
I actually do have two. I didn't intend to have two, but first one is, so the Kobayashi Maru is really their equivalent of Mega Man 10.
What, there's no way to beat it?
Unless I don't know if cheat. I want to do the right. second one. Though.
Unless you get a game genie and good. Cheat.
Hold on. You have to do the second one. So, hey, Brian Ibbot, do it.
Yeah, do it.
Twitter me.
I'm in favor of any scientific achievement that sends Phil Collins to an uninhabited planet with the intent of resurfacing it for life.
I can see where you had trouble deciding between the two.
Yes. Throbbing and inside out. That's the best way to eat it. That's how I like my meat. Rounding us up today, Randy Jordan, a.k.a. Randy Deluxe.
The Fly, 1986. A movie so disgusting that they ought to miniaturize it and put it in Walter Koenig's ear.
Yeah! Throwback. I likes the throwbacks. I now have...
Here's your Star Trek connection.
Indeed. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Randy created one. I like it better. Let's start with Dunaway.
Some movies ask you to suspend your belief. The Core tops that by asking you to suspend your intelligence as well.
Oh, very nice. I think it's disbelief, isn't it? Suspend your...
What did I say?
You said belief. Suspend your belief.
Oh, I'm sorry. Suspend something.
Suspend them both.
Suspend them both for this film.
You're not... You'll need neither one of these for this movie.
Let's see. That's the vagina. Oh, so we did all that. All right. Okay, let's get down and dirty with our Twitter post. Let's make this 140 characters or less. If you could sum up this film, let's start this time with Randy.
Outland. Where shall we put up the clock that counts down to the death of the protagonist? I know! Let's hang it in the sex bar!
Yeah. Perfect place.
All right, Dragon Slayer. In the Dark Ages, dragons were real boring.
Summed it up nicely. That is exactly kind of how I feel. I was a little bit bored. Good call. Team Gibbet once again triumphant on the hills of victory.
What, you're declaring victory? You haven't even given us yours yet.
Victory. Well, I don't do the...
Oh, so you're saying Brian Ibbot represents you
for... Yeah, he speaks for me and my people.
That's not true.
They're our people. That's right.
Team Deluxeway has to come up with two of these, you know.
That's some passion in that. I like it. And then finally, Brian Sting Panties Dunaway.
Dune. Finally, a movie brave enough to kill Sting. In Dune 2, perhaps we could kill Billy Idol.
Let's do it.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there!